Chapter 10. Night on Chandrila. Wind eases in through the windows, the curtains blowing, the breeze bringing the smell of sea brine and late summer mist.
Look,
Solo says, the holographic star map floating in the space amid him, Temen, and Sinjir.
Jakku's a dirt world, so that's good. You won't need to find a spaceport. The trick is getting past the blockade and landing somewhere they can't see you.
He swipes the air, and the hologram goes away.
I don't have any good maps of Jakku, but I can tell you most of the place is just dunes and rocks. But the buttes and plateaus lead into canyons, and canyons are a fine place to lose the Empire.
He smirks.
Trust me, I know. Any bolt hole you can find, take it.
Sinjir watches the smuggler. A smuggler or a hero of the rebellion? Does it even matter anymore? He's about to be a father. That's his role now. And it's driving him nuts by the look of it. Sinjir's seen something similar. Back in the Empire, you'd have officers stationed in faraway places, remote locations, distant bases. Some of them had that glint in their eyes. The wild stare of a Tuca cat someone tried to domesticate. It's the spark of dissatisfaction with your own captivity. Like you're trapped, always imagining a different life. It's important to see that spark, and to know it can turn into full-on steel-melting fire if you aren't careful. Sinjir always knew to look for those around him with that flash in their eye. It was always they who would betray the Empire. Their wildness made them dangerous. Solo's like that. That wildness, some combination of foolhardiness and happy lawlessness, is there behind his stare. He longs for adventure, craves it like some poor souls crave a smear of spice on the tongue. Or a drink on the lips, he thinks. And in this way, it makes sense suddenly that Solo fits so well inside the Rebellion. The Rebel Alliance was just a formalized coalition of criminals seeking to undermine their government. Rebels angry at their captivity, caged as they were by a lack of choices. Though maybe that's Sinjir's lingering Imperial side talking. All this is why Sinjir could never be a father. Solo will eventually find comfort in his captivity. But Sinjir would never find such peace. Settling down just isn't one of his skills. It's why he had to be rid of Condor.
Condor.
His mind suddenly wanders. His heart flutters. And he curses himself. Solo confirms what Sinjir already suspects when the pirate says,
Now I told you can take the Falcon. But you'd be a good sight better if you let me captain it. You don't know her like I do. She's finicky.
I flew it back from Kashyyyk, you know,
Temen says.
Not it. Her. Get the Falcon some respect, kid.
Fine, yeah, okay. I just mean I can fly it. Her.
Right now, it's just the three of them in Leia's apartment overlooking the coast. 10 steps to their right and they'd be out on the balcony, gazing out over the silver sea. The stars scattered across the night sky, like a million eyes gazing back.
I'd kill to be out there right now with a jorum of ski in my hand, a little ice in the glass, and nobody to bother me. Condor, foul, traitorous brain, quit your meandering.
He has to bring himself back to the task at hand. Jakku, Nora, Jazz. Fine, yes, the droid too. And Solo's helping them. He's helping them without Leia knowing, too. She's gone. Probably all night. The princess is with the Chancellor and a spare few others, trying to determine the best course of action for the Empire and Jakku. That path, however, is a political one. Temen and Sinjir have no time for politics. By the time the political machine growls to life and churns out a solution to their problem, Nora and Jazz will be dead. So will Sinjir and Temen. All of life in the galaxy will be dead, because politics is slower than a mud-stuck AT-AT. The plan is simple. Fly in with the Falcon, fast and furious. The plan is also Very stupid. Sinjir says, might I offer a contrary suggestion? How about we don't immediately fly a recognizable rebel ship into a starfield filled with the vessels of an enemy fleet? Instead, let me suggest sweet, sweet subterfuge. Those ships are being supplied somehow. We discover their supply line. We sneak aboard a cargo ship or shuttle, costumed in the guise of freight, and we let them deliver us to the surface like a present for a king.
You want us to hide in a box?
Temmin says, scowling.
Well, when you put it that way, it sounds rather dreadful. But yes, we could hide in a box.
He's about to ask Solo again if maybe, just maybe, the smuggler has a bottle of Corellian rum hidden somewhere in this domicile. The front door opens. The droid, T2LC, steps inside with a servo line, and following after is Princess Leia. She stops when she sees them. With a sigh, she says,
I should have known a conspiracy would bloom in my wake.
Hey, Han says, laughing. Don't blame me.
I always blame you.
He says to Sinjir and Temmin, sotto voce,
she really does.
The princess comes and sits down next to her husband. It's fascinating to watch, because usually Leia was all about the formality. Dealing with her sometimes felt icily mechanical, like you were meeting an assassin droid who, quite frankly, had precisely zero increments of time for your foolish human nonsense. Now, though, they're seeing her in the midst of her humanity, at home, tired and pregnant. The heirs of her royalty put aside for a time. Either that, or they're really becoming friends. Leia sits, and her hands move to encircle her belly, settling on the underside. It must be quite a weight.
She's getting full,
Sinjir thinks. He decides that it must be a horrid thing to carry a child. It's a parasite, basically. Amazing that humans are willing to procreate when this is the burden that results. He's glad he doesn't have to worry about any of that.
You're back early,
Han says to her.
I have the kind of heartburn that would drop a tauntaun faster than a Hoth winter, she explains. Mon is with Oxy now, and Akbar too. They'll be fine.
Here, Solo says, hurrying to his feet. Let me get you a glass of ioxin powder. That'll settle your chest.
No,
she says, waving him off.
Let me just sit. Besides, that stuff tastes like I'm sucking on an Imperial credit.
Her dubious laser-like glare suddenly turns to Temmin and Sinjir. The both of them look to each other, like vermin fixed by the stare of a nearby raptor.
I assume you're all cooking up a plan to go to Jakku and rescue Nora and Jazz.
Temmin says, obviously unsure how to answer. Sinjir shrugs.
Well, we're not forming a boys' choir. You're not thinking of going along.
That directed at Solo with a thrusting accusatory finger. It's not a question, it's a command.
Me?
Solo says, smirking nervously and offering up both palms in a kind of ha-ha surrender.
I never! You can't get rid of me that easily. I'm here with you, and the little bandit.
To Sinjir and Temmin, Leia says,
you could wait, you know. In fact, I'm advising you to wait. The Chancellor will try to move quickly with this, I suspect. Let it play out.
No,
Temmin says. The word is sharp and abrupt. He's upset by the idea, that much is clear.
The battle could go on forever. It'll be like a siege. And what if the New Republic doesn't win?
Thanks for your confidence,
Leia says, eyebrows arched. Solo sits back down.
Kid's right.
And just the same, flying through a blockade will be a lot easier when you're not the only ship trying to do it.
She's got a point, too,
Solo says. The boy's face tightens into a stubborn mask. He wants this, and he wants it now. Sinjir can't blame him. The boy, really a young man at this point, has been through considerable trauma. The events on Akiva, on Kashyyyk, and here on Chandrilla with his own father? Sinjir considers himself a bulwark of unsentimentality.
Conda.
But even that would rattle his cage. Temin wants this. Temin needs this. And Sinjir needs it too. He misses Jazz. Sinjir fits with her. Like a painting ripped in half, then taped back together again.
When he first saw her on the Endor moon, her about to retreat, him covered in Endor dirt and the blood of his fellow Imperials, he saw something in her eyes that just made sense. Absurd, beautiful sense. It's not romantic, of course. It's something far deeper. Something in their bones. It's not that they're all that alike, either. Maybe it's better because they're not all that alike. He'd do anything for her. Including run an Imperial blockade in a rickety ragdog freighter. He tells them as much.
I fear you won't dissuade us, Princess. Our destiny is a fixed point. We are going to Jakku. Will you stop us?
Leia sighs.
Officially, I have to try.
Blast it.
But,
she adds,
if you have not noticed, I am very, very pregnant. I don't think I realized you could be this pregnant. As such, I consider it entirely possible, likely even, that tomorrow morning I won't be up early, because tonight will be characteristically sleepless. Which means, if you try to escape in the Falcon before dawn, I might miss the chance to stand in your way. Which would be a shame. So please, do me the favor and leave later in the day.
Sinjir grins at her.
Message received, Your Highness.
But the bigger smile comes from Solo. His face is damn near cut in half by the grin that spreads. It's like he's proud of her. He leans in and kisses her cheek. And that, Sinjir decides, is that. In the morning, Jakku calls. Temin pushes along a couple of crates on a grav lift. Up over the landing platform, he spies the edge of the sea and the searing laser line of morning sunlight burning along it. From the other side of the platform comes a familiar face. Sinjir. The ex-Imperial crosses the platform, walking in long, sleepy strides and yawning as he does. They join up and walk side by side toward Hangar 34.
Sinjir yawns again.
It's disgustingly early.
Did you sleep?
Of course.
Really?
If by sleep you mean sat up in bed reading a book and sipping tea, then yes, I slept.
Temin gives him a look.
And by tea you mean rum?
Psst, no. I'm out of rum. This was proper Chandrillan Rava.
You always find something new to drink, don't you?
Variety is a vital component of a happy life.
Are you drunk right now?
I am a professional. I do not get drunk, I get pickled.
Temin gives him another look. This one so fierce he likes to imagine blaster bolts coming from his eyes and knocking that smug look off Sinjir's face. The one-time loyalty officer rolls his eyes.
Come now. I stopped partaking around midnight. Then I gathered supplies, and
his words drift.
And what?
And we have company.
Ahead, the hangar bay awaits. In it, a ship hides under a massive blue tarp. A ship shaped a good bit like the Millennium Falcon. Crossing in front of that ship are two Senate guards. Red helmets, white plumage. Batons at their side, hands waiting, as if ready to draw them. More footsteps reach Temin's ears. He looks left and right.
More guards. Two coming up on each side.
What is going on?
Temin asks in a low voice.
Just keep walking, Sinjir says.
Leia send these guys?
I hope not, or we miscalculated in trusting her. Hand on your hip.
He means hand on your blaster. Temin has a small pistol hanging there under the hem of his shirt. His fingers feel along the holster, drifting to the grip. These are Senate guards, and he hopes this is all above board.
but everything seemed okay on Liberation Day, too. Until it wasn't.
Stop there, sir,
one of the guards ahead says, one hand out peacefully, but the other idly fingering that baton at his hip. It's a threat. Subtle, but a threat just the same.
Do you know who we are?
Sinjir asks, chin up, nose down. He has engaged full-bore, haughty prig mode.
Well, do you?
You are Sinjir Rathvelis, and that is Temin Wexley.
Oh.
The ex-Imperial looks like someone popped his bubble.
Yes, that's us then. What is this all about?
The lead guard stares out over a smashed flat nose with steely eyes.
You're to turn around and return to your quarters.
We have business with our ship, Temin says. So move.
The guard's hand tightens around the baton.
The ship in that hangar belongs to General Solo.
He's not a general anymore, and he's letting us borrow it.
Her! Be that as it may, we have strict orders, and those orders are to ask you to turn around and go on your way.
You asked, Sinjir says, and we decline. Like the boy said, move.
Sir, I don't want this to get ugly.
Have you seen your face, guardsman? Too late to wish for pretty.
Temin feels the other guards. All four of them encroach tighter behind them, even as those in front grab their batons.
Sir, we have orders.
Whose orders?
Temin asks.
Who's keeping us here?
The Chancellor herself.
Sinjir and Temin look to each other. Both of their faces war with the question, is this real? They're both suspicious. Temin steps up, shirt pulled up, blaster revealed.
Guard, you better move now, or me and my friend here...
We'll leave peacefully,
Sinjir says, pulling Temin back sharply. He protests, but Sinjir shushes him and continues.
We didn't mean to step out of line, and please assure the Chancellor we are returning to our quarters.
Temin tries to pull out of Sinjir's grip, but the man's eyes meet his. There's an intensity there, and a message. That message is, let it go. The boy grits his teeth. He wants to charge past them, but he doesn't. He lets it go. As they hurry away, Temin
hisses. What was
that? I don't know, Sinjir says, but we're going to find
out. Where are we
going? Where else? We have no other friends here. We have to see Leia.
Leia. Her name, spoken in the dark.
Luke!
She reaches for him, but doesn't find him. The dark, now lit with stars. One by one, like eyes opening. Comforting at first, then sinister as she worries.
Who is out there? Who is watching us?
Hands reach for her. Hands of shadow, lifting her up, reaching for her throat. Her wrists, her stomach. Inside, the child kicks. She feels her baby turning inside, right side up and upside down, struggling to find his bearings, trying so hard to find his way free of her.
It's not time, she thinks. Just a little longer. Leia.
Luke,
she wants to cry out, but her words won't come. Her mouth is sealed. A hand pressed over it. One by one, stars go dark again, winking out of existence as if by a hand slowly closing over them.
Leia!
She gasps and wakes.
Han. It's just Han.
He's by the side of the bed, rousing her, gently shaking her shoulder. The dream recedes like a wave going back to sea.
Hi,
she says, her mouth tacky, her eyes full of sleep. Her middle twists, too. It's not the baby. It's some unseen fear uncoiling. The remnants of the dream haunt her. But they break apart like a sandcastle as she sits up and clears her head, doing as Luke taught her to do.
Breathe in, breathe out. Be mindful of the world, the galaxy and your place within it, everything will be okay. The Force will be your guide.
You sleep like the dead these days, he says.
And probably snore like a Gamorrean.
She blinks and regards him. He's fully dressed. That means he's been up for a while. She senses something coming off him. A restlessness. A fear of settling down that only leaves him more unsettled. An image forms clear in her mind. Chewbacca. Han misses his co-pilot. And why wouldn't he? Those two have been together for so long. He should probably be married to that lovable hairsuit instead of her.
It's early. You're awake.
He's always slept like a scoundrel. One eye open. Ready for whatever may come. He said he used to sleep in fits and starts whenever he could grab a little shut-eye. And he has a hard time calling this place home. Home for him has always been the Falcon. Even still, he's not a morning person. But since Kashyyyk, since saying goodbye to Chewie, this is how he's been. He goes to bed after her, wakes up before her, like an animal in a cage, pacing, pacing. But today, a new feeling. He's worried.
You need to see something,
Han says.
Can it wait?
I don't think it can, sweetheart.
Holonet News. It's been a long night, and Mon Mothma thought they had gotten somewhere. If the Empire was on Jakku, she had to take careful, measured steps to see the shape of the threat that awaited them. That meant sending probe droids to scout. Maybe a ship built for stealth, flown by one of their best pilots. It meant trying to see if they had anybody at all on Jakku who could report in. Seeing what was going on in orbit didn't give a sense of what was happening on the ground. Was it an occupation? Were they even on the surface? Could they be looking for something? Or someone? Now all the careful planning, all their consideration, gone. Shattered. There on the holoprojector stands Tolwar Wartol. He, like other Orishin, has smooth skin, peppered with uneven, asymmetrical, disconnected plates. The plates are smooth and catch the light like black mirrors. The Holonet is presently replaying a speech he just gave here on Chandrilla, down in the Eleutherian Plaza. His supporters gathered to hear him. He spoke with passion, his nose slits flaring, his bisected lower jaw giving his mouth the look of a blooming flower whenever he hit the speech's talking points. And oh, what a speech it was. Mon, Oxy, and Akbar had all settled their plan and were, just before sunset, ready to break for the day and attempt to catch a few scant hours of sleep before putting actions in motion to study the Empire more. Then a call came in from Sandeev Sela.
You need to turn on Holonet News.
The first thing Wartol said to the crowd and to the civilized galaxy, thanks to the reach of the network, was this.
The Empire has been found!
With those words spoken, Mon's heart froze in her chest.
What? How? How could he know?
Presently, Holonet News is repeating his speech. This is the third go-round. His name is trending, his popularity surging. On the screen, Senator Wartol is saying,
Chancellor Mon Mothma has discovered where the bulk of the Imperial forces are hiding, and it is on a distant world near the unknown regions, a world called Jakku.
Then comes the accusation.
You did not know this information, and I did not know it either, because the Chancellor has been sitting on that information, nesting upon it. Like a serpent hoarding precious treasure. Why didn't she say anything? What did she plan to do with this knowledge? If the New Republic is to be free of corruption, offering a government that belongs to the galactic citizens, should there not be total transparency and accountability? Secrets separate us. I would seek to demolish that wall of secrets, my friends. We must be partners in this.
The crowd cheers. Joyous rhetoric from a man painting himself as the savior. Everyone likes to be sold easy promises, don't they? He goes on to outline his plans for the chancellorship. Transparency, a strong central military, and policies that will ensure everyone's voice will be heard.
We see the Empire now, and we must act. The Chancellor wishes for us to sit on our hands. And every moment she waits, the Empire grows stronger, like an infection we thought had been beaten back. If we do not intensify the cure, the disease will return. It will attack once more, just as it attacked on Chandrilla. Can we afford to pursue peace before the war is done? Can we afford such soft hands steering our nascent democracy? I think not, my friends.
Turn it off, the Chancellor says. Oxy does.
Preposterous!
Akbar announces, gruffer and louder than usual. It was only recently that the Chancellor resumed even speaking to Akbar. He and Leia both are still somewhat political pariahs for their actions on Kashyyyk. Though that effort secured the New Republic a much-needed win, it still painted them as iconoclasts. Rebels, ironically. Now, though, she's thankful to have Akbar here. He remains a voice of stability and sanity. He goes on.
You had this information for less than a standard day. It would be impossible, not to mention unethical, to immediately tell the galaxy what has been discovered. Chaos would ensue.
Chaos will ensue, Oxy says. Thanks to the senator from Orish. And none of this explains how he even knows, Mon points out.
She fears the worst. Someone close to her is the leak. But who? Oxy has been here nearly the whole time, taking only a few breaks to pick up food or check on her children or her Tuca cat. Could she be the leak? Certainly it wouldn't be Akbar. Though he did go against her with Kashyyyk. Could he slyly be supporting Senator Wartol's bid for Chancellor? That seems unlikely. The Mon Cala Admiral is a warrior, yes, but a warrior committed to peace in their time. War is a means to an end, but the way Wartol talks, it is the persistent and never-ending means. He sees peace being maintained by a strong military, and a willingness to deploy it freely, even after the Empire is gone. Mon wants a coalition of militaries, an alliance-driven pact of peace that systems could join to support one another when danger encroaches. Akbar supports that dream. That leaves who? Leia? Han? No. The boy, Temin, and the ex-Imperial? Could be. They certainly wanted to take swift action. The boy in particular may be suffering from the impetuousness and naivete of youth. His mother is gone. His father, the foe who almost killed her. Certainly a young man like that could be drawn in by a figure like Wartol. She reminds herself to keep a wary eye there. Perhaps that boy should not be trusted. She tries to flex her fist again. Mon's connection to her own fingers is soft and distant, as if they belong to someone else. She erupts suddenly, a fit of forced optimism.
This is all normal. These are the necessary bumps and scratches of a growing democracy. We should not expect politics to be neat and tidy, and we are reminded of that today. Enough looking back. Now we look forward.
We have to respond, Oxy says.
And soon, I fear,
Akbar adds.
It seems that even a few hours of sleep are no longer in our equation,
Mon says with a beleaguered sigh.
I shall begin working on my response immediately. Oxy, contact HoloNet News. Have them ready for my statement. And Admiral?
I will initiate the probe droid and scout immediately,
he says with a brusque nod.
Good. Let's remain vigilant. We have a long day ahead of us, and I fear that traitors are afoot.